We were getting together on a post some evening, as Sam had mentioned to me the other day, Nish Nachi Antav Avek, Nor Nachi Antav Harayim, trying to figure out how to ensure that the day not doesn't just go by, but goes in, trying to figure out how to absorb Tzom Gedalia. Sure raises the question of what were we supposed to have absorbed, what we're supposed to be working on over the course of Tzom Gedalia. Which raises the question, what exactly is Tzom Gedalia about? Well, what's the story, and then what's the message? That's really sort of the two questions. The story is fascinating, the story is tragic, and the story is also more than a little curious, especially the fact that there's a fast as a result. So let's try to take a look at it, and then we'll look at a pair of Gemaras, and hopefully that'll give us some insight into what it is that we were fasting about today. What are the ideas we can take with us? And we'll also maybe close by looking at another day in the calendar, a couple months away, which is perhaps getting ahead of ourselves, beyond Tishrei, but perhaps is in a sense historically and thematically a response, a healthy response to Tzom Gedalia. So if you have a Tanakh in front of you, so just to set the stage for the story of Tzom Gedalia, this is Yirmiyahu is one of the Nevi'im who was with the Jewish people before, during, and after the destruction of the first Beis HaMikdash. As you mentioned before, you have Jeremiah. He was the one who was delivering Jeremiah. He was the one who, during the closing years of the period of the first Beis HaMikdash, he's reminded the Jews time and again, you need to do tshuva or else HaKadosh Baruch Hu is going to take away the Beis HaMikdash. You need to do tshuva, HaKadosh Baruch Hu take away the Beis HaMikdash. What's the background to that? It had been several generations earlier that this goes back already to Yeshayahu HaNavi. Several generations earlier, there were rise of a series of superpowers in the Middle East, both to the south of Eretz Yisrael and to the northeast. There's the rise of Assyria, the rise of Egypt, the return of Egypt, and the rise of Babylonia. From the period of David HaMelech all the way through his great-great-great-grandson, Chizkiyahu, and then all the way until Chizkiyahu's great-grandson, Yoshiyahu HaMelech, Josiah, so there was a powerful kingdom in Eretz Yisrael. For much of the time, there were two powerful kingdoms, the kingdom in the north, the kingdom in the south. Shlomo HaMelech is told, the son of David, he's told by the Navi that because of his sins, Kadosh Baruch Hu will not divide his kingdom in half during his lifetime, out of respect to David HaMelech, but after Shlomo passes, his son Rechavam will not take control of all of Eretz Yisrael. His son Rechavam will take control over the southern part of Eretz Yisrael, the southern kingdom, Malchus Yehuda. But the northern kingdom, Malchus Yisrael, will separate from Malchus Yehuda, which had been the situation before David HaMelech. So the United Kingdom will come to an end. And that's much of Sefer Melachim tells the story going back and forth between the Northern Kingdom and the Southern Kingdom. The kings of the Southern Kingdom were inevitably Rishaim. Excuse me, the kings of the Northern Kingdom, Malchus Yisrael, were inevitably Rishaim. Kings of the Southern Kingdom, which was Malchus Beis David, the old descendants of David HaMelech, there were some were tzaddikim and some were not. Chizkiyahu, he's one of the great tzaddikim. His son and Chizkiyahu's son, Chizkiyahu's grandson, are very idolatry focused. But Chizkiyahu's great grandson is King Yoshiyahu. King Yoshiyahu leads a tshuva movement. That's a discussion for a different time. King Yoshiyahu is the last real king of Malchus Yehuda. All the kings that come after Yoshiyahu are descendants of Yoshiyahu, but none of them really are really in charge. All of them, once Yoshiyahu is killed, in a military encounter with Paro Necho, who was on his way up using the coastal route along the coast of the Mediterranean coast of Eretz Yisrael, trying to get up north to fight the northeastern powers. Yoshiyahu tries to cut him off, and Yoshiyahu is killed in that encounter. And from that point on, Eretz Yehuda is no longer really a sovereignty. That's the end of Jewish sovereignty, the first commonwealth. After that point, all the descendants of Yoshiyahu officially are inhabiting the throne of Yehuda, are practically speaking either puppets of Babel or puppets of Mitzrayim. No one's really in charge. And after a while, Nebuchadnezzar, who was the emperor of Babel, so he's sort of cycling through different members of Yoshio's family, looking for one who will be more more compliant. There's the Golos Yechoniah. Yechoniah is one of the descendants of Yoshio, who was originally installed by Nebuchadnezzar and then rejected. He wasn't loyal enough. And that's the first major Golos of the southern kingdom. We know Yechoniah because we hear about him every year in the Megillah. Because Mordechai was sent, Im HaGolah Asher, he was sent, Im Yechoniah Melech Yehuda. He was sent into Golos, Nebuchadnezzar, the first wave of Golos, the first major wave of Jews being sent into captivity in Babylonia. That's when when Nebuchadnezzar deposes King Yechoniah and sends a lot of the Jewish, young Jewish aristocracy, among them Mordechai and Daniel, Hananiah, Mishael, Azariah, they're sent there. And around a decade later, King Tzidkiyahu, who had been also later installed by Nebuchadnezzar, comes back, deposes Tzidkiyahu, and destroys the Beis HaMikdash. And that happens on Tisha B'Av. And Yirmiyahu had for years and years and years been telling the Jews, you don't realize what's going on. You can convince yourself that you're fine. You can convince yourself. Tzidkiyahu can convince himself that it's all as well. And he's going to hold out. He's going to hold off the Babylonians. HaKadosh Baruch Hu told me, if you don't do tshuva, it's not going to last. And then at a certain point, he says, HaKadosh Baruch Hu told me it's not going to last. Period. It's done. It's a matter of time. And they don't want to listen to him. They throw him into a pit. But ignoring bad news doesn't make it not happen. And that's that story of the Yirmiyahu in the pit is in Sefer Yirmiyahu, chapter 38, Perek Lamed Ches, in the pit, out of the pit, and Yirmiyahu, he's just trying, and he's just seeing, everyone is just ignoring him. In Perek Lamed Ches, 39, we're going to skip a little bit, we'll skip lightly until we get to the actual story of Gedaliah, but Shana, the 39th Perek opens, Shana at Shias, with Tzidkiyahu Melech Yehuda b'chodesh Asiri, it's the 10th month. That's Teves. Banavu Chanetzar Melech Bavel b'chol chelol Mitzrayim v'yitzur le. They lay siege in the month of b'chodesh Asiri. Right, the month of Teves. The month of Teves in the 9th year of Tzidkiyahu Melech. A year and a half later, b'ashteyas reishana Tzidkiyahu in the 11th year of Tzidkiyahu b'chodesh Harvi in the month of Tammuz. The Tisha L'Chodesh, that's when they break through the city in the month of Tammuz. That happens the 9th of Tammuz the first time around. It happens the 17th of Tammuz the second time around. That's what, so far we've seen Asar B'Teves, we've seen Shavas B'Tammuz. And then as Perek Lamed Tes unfolds, we hear about how the Nebuchadnezzar and his forces begin to move throughout the city of Yerushalayim now that they're in. They captured Tzidkiyahu, they blind him, and they're burning this, and they're burning that. They destroy the Beis HaMikdash. But then they find Yirmiyahu, and they tell Yirmiyahu, you have your freedom. And here in Perek Lamed Tes, Pasuk Gedalet, Vayishlechu Beikrus Yirmiyahu Mechatzar HaMatara, they free Yirmiyahu. They hand Yirmiyahu over to this fellow by the name of Gedaliah ben Achikam. And who is this Gedaliah? So as we turn to the 40th chapter, we begin to hear more about Gedaliah. Here in Perek Mem Pasuk Vav, Yavo Yirmiyahu el Gedaliah ben Achikam haMitzpasa. He comes to Gedaliah. Gedaliah is in the town of Mitzpah. VaYeshev Ito B'Socha Aman Ashurim Ba'aretz. Among the Gedaliah had been put in charge of a group of Jews who were allowed by Nebuchadnezzar to remain. Nebuchadnezzar was allowing a small group to remain. allowing the Jewish, the bulk of the Jewish population of Yerushalayim and the environs had either been massacred by Nebuchadnezzar and his armies or also been sent off into captivity. But a group remains. A group remains under the governorship of Gedaliah ben Achikam. Now it's no longer a pretense of a puppet king. He is not a king at all. But he is the governor, the colonial governor. He's been installed by the emperor Nebuchadnezzar to administer this province, this colony of the empire. And now word begins to get out. Parak Mem Pasuk Zayin Veyishmu Kol Sarei Chayalim Asher Basadeh Hema Va'Anshehem, the soldiers who are still out in the field who had not been in Yerushalayim when Yerushalayim fell and they survived. Now they hear Ki Hifkid Melech Bavez Gedaliah Ben Achikam. Parak Mem Pasuk Zayin 47. They hear that the emperor of Bavel had put Gedaliah into place, a Jew, governor over this imperial colony. And there's a population with them, men, women, children, whoever wasn't sent to Bavel was allowed to remain with Gedaliah. And then they begin to come. And the soldiers who had survived from the forces, military forces of Tzidkiyahu, they begin to come. Perichet, Pasikhes, Me'avol Gedaliah Mitzpasa. They begin to come. Yishmael, Yochanan, Yonasan, Saraya, a whole series of names. These were military commanders. And as you listen to the conversation, you begin to appreciate immediately what the concerns are. Yishaval Pasik Tes. Yishaval Hem Gedaliah Ben Achikam Ben Shafan. The first thing we hear about, right, they meet, what's the first thing you do? Not hello, not can I offer you a drink, not here's a place to stay, not what do you need. The first thing Gedaliah offers them is an oath, which tells you obviously that we're dealing with either a very low trust situation or a situation of incredible, low trust in some direction or another. What's the oath? Al tiru me'avod ha-kasdim. Don't be frightened of working for the Kasdim, another name for the Babylonians, the Babylonians. Shvu ba'aretz ve'ibdu es melech Babel v'yitav lachem. You can stay here in Eretz Yisrael, and you'll work for, you'll be subjects of the emperor of Babel, of Nebuchadnezzar, and it'll be good. It'll be good. Ani hinini yosheba mitzpah la'moth ne'kasdim. I'm here in mitzpah. I'm the liaison. I'm going to run interference if there's issues from the Kasdim. And you can go back to farming. Atem isvu yain v'kaitchem. Go out into the fields and begin to harvest, begin to gather. Shvu simu b'kei b'kleichem. You can hold on to what you harvest. Shvu barechen shetufastem. You can move into the towns. And he begins to call to other Jews as well. Other Jews here as well in the outlying areas. Yehudim asher b'mepasi gidal. The Jews who are in Moab, the Jews who are in Ammon, who are in Edom. That's the other side, what we would call in contemporary terms, southern Jordan. On the other side of the Yarden, the other side of the Yam HaMelech, they begin to hear that there's an opportunity to come back to Eretz Israel. The things have calmed down. Now the fact that the very first thing Gedaliah does is to offer them not stuff, but an oath, and clearly their concern is safety, right? Well, Nebuchadnezzar came twice. He came and took away, carted away Yechaniah and the aristocracy. He came again a little more than a decade later and carted away Tzidkiyahu and 90-some-odd% of the Jews who were there, massacred or carted them away, destroyed the Beis HaMikdash, and now you're in charge. Remember, we just heard Pasuk Gedal. There were 8 Jews who had moved 50-100 miles to the east. They ran to Ammon, they ran to Moab because they were fighting for their lives. So, but on the other hand, you come back, and the soldiers in particular, these are soldiers who are battle-worn. So Gedaliah needs to convince them, you're safe, it's okay. And know, he's talking about stability. Move into the fields, move into the towns, lay down your arms and take up farming. It's okay. It's safe, I have your back. I'm going to run interference. I'll be the one, you don't have to deal with the Kasdim, you don't have to look at them. I'll be the one who will be interfacing with them. I'll be up in Mitzpah, and you can move into the surrounding farmland, and it's okay, we can go back to normal living. Obviously, based on Mikdashless, obviously, tremendous avelis for loss of Mikdash, for loss of astronomical number of Jews, But we can begin to rebuild the life here. And the word spreads, as we saw in Pasuk Yud Aleph, and Jews begin to come. Word Pasuk Yud Aleph, the word spread, and Pasuk Yud Beis, they're here. But Yeshuva kol ha-Yehudim kolam ha-Kamosh, and Yitzhushan, wow. There's almost like a, if one could say, a kibbutz galios. Right? In the shadow of the destruction of first, in the shadow of the Tisha B'Av, the first Beis HaMikdash, Jews are beginning to come back to the area, from the outlying areas, from neighboring countries. They go Eretz Yehuda, they come back to Eretz Yehuda, and they come to Gedalia, and they do as he had instructed. And in the Pasuk Yud Beis, yain v'kaitar be'emot. And it's an incredible harvest. And this is our post-Tisha B'Av. The post-Tisha is late summer, early fall, and there, things have been growing, untended. No one had been harvesting. Everyone had been too busy with the war or running for their lives. But he says, now the fields are still full. You can go and harvest. Sounds very peaceful. It sounds almost idyllic. It doesn't last long. The very next pasuk, Gimel. Yochanan ben Kareach. V'chol Sareach ha'ilim asher basadeh. Yochanan is one of the names we had heard just a few psukim earlier. The list of military leaders who had come to Gedalia, you heard about Yochanan and Yonasan ben Kareach. So Yochanan ben Kareach, some of their brothers, he was second on the list. The Chol Sareach Ha'ilim Esher Basadeh, with together with all the other officers, Bol Gedalia Mitzpah. They come to Gedalia, to Mitzpah, to the town where he's located, and they tell him, Pasi Gedalid, things are not so simple. But I listen, listen to this intrigue. That Yochanan was the second leader that we, second general that we had heard about in the preceding pasuk, in pasuk Ches. Yochanan and all the others. So who's missing? Number one. Who's number one? Yishmael. Going back, that's Yishmael ben Asanya. So Yochanan says there's a reason why Yishmael is not here. We're here to talk to you about Yishmael. Yadoa teidaki ba'alis melech b'nei Amon shalach es Yishmael ben Asanya l'hakos chonachesh. Yishmael has been hired as a hitman to kill you. By whom? By the neighboring king, the king of Ammon. We just heard about the Jews who were coming from Ammon and Moab and Edom. Well, the king of Ammon is not so excited, for obvious reasons, that you're here. Because he thought the Jews would be gone and then he could perhaps move in. Certainly not have to worry about a Jewish state to his west. And now all of a sudden, you know, it didn't play out quite the way he thought. He thought that Eretz Yisrael would be Judenrein, but it's not. Now it's not Judenrein. The Jews actually have some sort of autonomous structure under the aegis of the Babylonian Empire. But Alis is not very excited about that. So he's decided to take matters into his own hands. But he's not going to do it himself. He actually hired one of the Jews. He hired Yishmael to kill you. Elohim in lahem Gedalia ben Achikam. Gedalia doesn't believe him. He says, what are you talking about? Jew's going to kill a Jew? Absurd. Nonsense. You're jealous. You're making up stories. You're paranoid. Stop. Go back to the farm. Pasuk Tezvav. Yochanan is back again. Yochanan ben Kareach Amar el Gedalia b'seisa. He comes to him in private. A private meeting. Malvin points out, the first time he tried with a delegation. And that's what it said in Pasuk Yud. He had come together with the whole group. Sounds like all of the general, all the officers except Yishmael. It didn't work. So Yochanan has a private meeting with Gedalia. He says, you got to believe me. And here he actually he doesn't just talk about the problem. The second time he meets with Yochanan, he suggests a solution. He's a solution seller. Like Yosef, the original solution seller in Tanakh, but this is a different type of, this is a less peaceful type of solution. El Chanova Ake, Perek Mem Pasuk Tezvav, 40:15. El Chanova Ake is Yishmael ben Asanya. Let me go, I'll kill Yishmael. Ish lo yeda, no one will know. I mean, they'll know that he was murdered. I mean, no one will know that it was you. Lama yakcha nefesh, why should he murder you? V'nafotsu kol Yehuda nikbat me'lecha v'abda sheris Yehuda. You'll die, and that'll be the end of the Jewish community. It's not just personal. And Gedalia says, Tachikim, the closing pasuk of Perek Mem, Al Tasa Davar Zed, don't do it. Shekar Tadav Yishmael, you're lying. You make up a story, it can't be Yishmael, doesn't mean it. He has no homicidal intent. You have no right to kill him. And essentially, Yochanan is saying, He's a rodent. He's out to kill you. Habala hargo, hashkim hargo. Let me do your dirty work for you. It has to happen. Let me do it. And interesting, the Malbim explains in his closing psukim what Yochanan thought that Gedalia was worried. Yochanan misunderstood Gedalia's hesitation. Yochanan thinks that Gedalia's hesitation is, I'm going to murder him without due process. That's going to, I'm concerned about for my life, but if I'm doing without due process, people will say, what sort of leader is this? He just, wanton killing, and I'm going to lose my right to rule. So that's what Yochanan thought Gedalia's hesitation was. He says, you don't have to be involved. I'll just make it happen. I'll assassinate him, al pi halacha et mutter, because he means to kill you. And politically speaking, it will be untraceable. No one will know it came from you. They just think there was some, there was some turf war between these two military officers. He didn't realize Gedalia wasn't worried about the political outcomes. Gedalia really didn't believe him. I was like, it's murder. I don't think Yishmael's out to get me. Unfortunately, Perek Mem Aleph, Perek Mem lays sets the stage for Perek Mem Aleph. Perek Mem Aleph opens with the murder of Gedalia. To the very first opening pasuk, B'chodesh HaShvi, the seventh month, that's Tishrei, Bo Yishmael ben Asanya ben Elishama, Mizera HaMalucha. Yishmael, we already heard about his name, this is a more elaborate, he's the son of Nasanya, who is the son of Elishama, from royal stock, V'rabei HaMelech, and other royal officers come with him, Asara Nashim Yitov, it comes with a minion. He comes with a whole entourage. He comes to meet Gedalia. And they have a meal together. Right? There's actually a debate whether this is happening on what day of the month did this happen. Right? So we usually assume that it happened on the 3rd, or earlier today, the 3rd of Tishrei. Radak says, if there's no date mentioned, then the word Chodesh, unless otherwise specified, means Rosh Chodesh. As in Machar Chodesh. Right? When Yonatan says to David, Machar Chodesh, that means tomorrow will be the Chodesh. What do you mean the month? Not the month, I mean it'll be Rosh Chodesh. So the Radak says, right here, he says, Chodesh HaShvi means Rosh Chodesh Tishrei, otherwise known as Rosh Hashanah. He says, Rosh Hashanah, Radak suggests it's not, Gimel Tishrei was not Gedalia's yahrzeit. Gedalia's yahrzeit is the first day of Rosh Hashanah. It's a nidcha. It's always a nidcha because we're not going to have the fast on Rosh Hashanah. We always push it off 2 days to Gimel Tishrei. And Yishmael makes it seem like, we're pal. We're going to have a state dinner together. And next thing you know, Yakim Yishmael ben Asanya, Aseres HaNashim HaRashav HaYu Ito. But he hadn't come to give kavod to Gedalia. He had come to murder him. And he, together with his 10 goons, they assassinated him. He who had been appointed by the Nebuchadnezzar. And let's read a little more, but already there are a couple of interesting phrases here. In Pasuk Aleph and Pasuk Beis. In Pasuk Aleph, the description of Yishmael was unusually elaborate. We already heard about Yishmael ben Asanya. Now he's Yishmael ben Asanya ben Elishama, again, the whole Yichus. And then in Pasuk Bey, it's interesting that the Navi sort of sticks in that added hanging phrase at the end, the hanging clause, Asher hifkid melech bavel baretz. They had killed Gedalia, he who had been appointed by Nebuchadnezzar. And then it doesn't stop there. They kill Gedalia, and then they also kill everyone else. It's a bloodbath. It's called Pasuk Gimel. Call Yehud Meshahayu Itoa Es Gedalia B'Mitzvah. All the rest of the Jews in the town of Mitzvah. Gone. If Sakazim Meshanim Tusham, whichever Bavliim were there, this was the governmental outpost. So there were probably some emissaries of the, of central headquarters. The Babylonian Empire were there. Yishmael and his goons kill them all. Everyone. And then it gets worse. Pasuk Dalet. It's the second day. The next day. No one else knows. Ishlo Yada. Because he had massacred the entire town. So outside of the town, no word had escaped. No one knew. Anyone outside the town had no idea. It was quiet. It was pre-cell phones. It was pre-any sort of remote communication. Jews begin to show up to mitzvah. And it's such a tragedy, agave tragedy. Jews are beginning to come from the north now. We already heard about Jews coming from the east, from Ammon, Moab. Now there are Jews coming from the northern part of Eretz Israel, from Shechem, from Shiloh, from the Shomron. They're coming down to south to Yerushalayim. Shmonim ish megulachei zakan, kruei begadim, misgodadim. 80 Jews who are torn clothing, they're unkempt, they're showing signs of avelos. Showing signs of avelos, being misabel, presumably over Beis HaMikdash. They had heard. They had been coming. Here's They came with karbanos in hand, with flour, with lavon in hand to bring a karb mincha. And the Radak points out, they're being misabel and they're bringing a karban. Well, you know what that means? That means when they had set out from home, they didn't even know that the Beis HaMikdash was destroyed. Maybe it hadn't even been destroyed yet. Certainly word hadn't reached them. They thought there was still a Beis HaMikdash. Maybe we can, they probably knew that the situation was tenuous. They thought there was still a Beis HaMikdash. They're going to seize the opportunity to bring a carbon. So they pack up some flour and they head out to Yerushalayim. On the way, they hear Beis HaMikdash is no longer. They tear their clothes. Now they show up. But they hear, but you can get to mitzvah. You can get to mitzvah. At least there'll be a place to be. And they show up in mitzvah. And Yishmael comes out. And this is Avelos on top of Avelos. Yishmael comes out to meet them. Kifgoshosam. He tells them, Bo el Gedaliah ben Achikam, come on in. Come on in to Gedaliah. As soon as they come in, they're talking to Gedaliah's murderer. They come into the town, soon he has them inside the walls. Vayishchatein Yishmael ben Nesayin al Toch HaBor. It almost has a Holocaust ring to it. He kills them into the pit. Huvan Hashem Yisharito. Once again, he with his goons. And then there's some Jews who are begging for mercy. And then you take a look at the next pasuk. Talks about this pit, pasuk tes. Now we'll come back to that pasuk in a moment. Let's see how the story ends, and then we'll come back to some of the hanging thread. Pasuk yud vayishbi Yishmael is called Sheir Sa'am. Now Yishmael starts to move around. You know, sort of move out of his initial perimeter and begins to shackle and capture other Jews that are in the area. Whoever's left, whoever, as the pasuk stresses, whoever had survived the massacre at the hands of Nuchanetz and Nuvuzradan, now is being captured by a Jew, Yishmael. Yochanan hears the pasuk Yidalf, and he's the one who had tried to avert this disaster. Didn't work. He hears Pasuk Yidalf, Ace Kol HaRa Asher Asay Yishmael, and he hears about the whole story. And he goes to fight. He goes to fight, and the Pesukim talk about the Yishmael attempts to escape in Pasuk Tezvav. But it's too late. The damage has been done. The damage has been done, and the Pasuk ends, the Perek ends, that they're running to Mitzrayim. Why are they running to Mitzrayim? Yelchu v'yishbu
b'gerus. Babylonian retribution.
Yeah, because a Jew, we look at it as the Jew killed Gedaliah, the Tzaddik. But Babylon's look at it as the Jews rebelled against, forget the fact that Gedaliah is Jewish. Gedaliah is our man, right? That's an act of, that's treason, mutiny. And the Yochanan says, we're all sitting ducks now. And they need to escape to Mitzrayim. And it gets so bad. It gets so bad. We'll come to Perek Mem Beis in a couple of Perek Mem Beis and Gimel a little bit in a couple of moments. But let's first just sort of digest the core story. The core story, it looks like, is Perek Mem Aleph, right? Is the murder in cold blood, the assassination of Gedaliah. And the subsequent, consequent murder of hundreds of other Jews. and laying trap, ambushing Jews, all at the hands of the Jew Yishmo. What's driving us? What's driving us?
Once he kills Gedaliah in Mitzvah, why is he even staying there anymore? In other words,
What's the motivation? You take let's go back to opening two psukim of Parak Memalef. And we had seen there were sort of these two phrases that seemed excess. So the hanging phrase in Pasuk Beis, I think now we understand, right? The Pasuk had stressed, he killed Gedaliah, he who had been appointed by Melech Bavel, right? So certainly at least the first layer of that is it wasn't merely the murder of a man, it was a tragic murder of a man, it was also essentially an act of rebellion, at least it would be interpreted as an act of rebellion against the Babylonian Empire, and he was exposing all the Jews, even the Jews who he didn't kill directly, he was exposing everyone to danger. But there's more to that, and for that, let's go back to Pasuk Aleph. Perek Mem Aleph, Pasuk Aleph. Yishmael appears, but he doesn't just appear as Yishmael ben Nesanya, now all of a sudden, he's Yishmael the son of Nesanya, grandson of Elishama, Mizerah HaMaluch, from royal stock, he's coming with other royal officers. Why all the pomp and ceremony? We met him before, we didn't hear about his grandfather. So why all of a sudden are we getting this new introduction or reintroduction? I believe it's the Malbim who suggests that it was never relevant before. He was just, when we met him in Parag Mem, he was a military officer. He was Yishmael ben Nesanya. And there was Yochanan ben Kerech and Yosef ben Kerech. That's how you call him. His name was Yishmael ben Nesanya. But now he's no longer a military officer. Now the Pesukim are just trying to explain what was his motivation for doing this. It wasn't PTSD. What it was something nefarious. It was the fact that he walked in with malice aforethought. He walks in prepared to kill Gedaliah as a member of Malchus Beis David. That's what he was in his head. In other words, he was jealous. He was jilted. Pointed Gedaliah, should have been me. I am from royal stock. The chutzpah. What's he doing taking the job? That job is mine. We've heard that before. We heard that out of the mouth of Korach. And that's how Chazal understand what drives Korach.
But isn't he seen before as actually just a mercenary of Melech?
Yishmael, we had met Yishmael initially as one of the officers of the Jewish army, one of those officers who had survived because he had been stationed out in the field away from Yerushalayim, and when Yerushalayim fell with sack, he and Yochanan, Yonatan, this whole group, had been out of harm's way. So they survived, Nebuchadnezzar leaves, leaving Gedaliah in charge, and now they come to Mitzvah to meet the new leader, to meet Gedaliah. But they weren't all coming with the same intent. All the rest were coming and say, okay, so now you're in charge, so now let's build something together. Yishmael came, burning with jealousy. He's in charge. If Tzidkiyahu is gone, Yechaniah is gone, Tzidkiyahu is gone, I'm next in line. And the jealousy had run amok to the extent that it had been motzi him midaito. He lost all sense of morality. And that's probably part of that hanging phrase in Pasuk Beis as well. It's not only that killing Gedaliah would have significance, would have very negative outcomes because he is a Babylonian official. That's also why. He killed him not because he was Gedaliah. He killed him because he had been appointed rather than me. He had taken the job that should have been mine. And that the jealousy had made him so incredibly irrational that he stooped to homicide. And he didn't. And such a horrific example of Avera Goreres Avera. Not only does the jealousy and the losachmod lead to losirtzach, to murder, but the murder of one becomes the murder of a bloodbath of a whole town. And it's so irrational. He wants to be in charge. You want to be in charge, so why are you killing all your potential subjects? He just lost it. Entirely lost it. And it gets so bad that over the course of the next two prakim, which we're not going to, from a point of view of time, we're not going to look at inside. It gets so bad that they ultimately turn against Yirmiyahu, because Yochanan ben Kareach did not succeed in convincing Gedaliah to save himself. So he says, well, now we better get out of here. So he says, I have to take over. I'm in charge. I'll take over. And he says, people, we got to go down to Mitzrayim. Mitzrayim was the other superpower that could buffer them against Babel. Yirmiyahu tells them, stay here. And Yochanan turns to Yirmiyahu. No one had turned to Yochanan. Yochanan turns to Yirmiyahu. Yochanan would try to save Gedaliah. He says, Yirmiyahu, you're a faker, you're a sham. You're trying to get us to stay here. You're in cahoots with the rest of them. It's so incredibly sad. Everything falls apart. Now it's not just Yishmael. Yochanan loses his moral bearings, doesn't stoop to murder. But you see this disintegration. But what I want, now that we've seen the story, I want to look at a pair of Gemaras. If you'd like to, you need not. If you want to take a sheet, I'll pass them around. A pair of Gemaras, and we'll take a look at a pasuk that we skipped before in Perek Mem. And that pair of Gemaras hopefully will give us, now that we've seen the story, will allow us to appreciate perhaps multiple layers in what's going on. Because if I asked you what was the sin of this episode, of this horrific story of Gedaliah, who's the sinner?
Ishmael,
right? The murderer, the jealous murderer. And in fact, if you look at Maseches Rosh Hashanah, Daf Yud Ches, Amud Beis, that Gemara that deals with, at the top quotes a pasuk from Zechariah, which enumerates all of the four Tanios that commemorate the Churban. See at the top, Tzom HaRevi, the fast of Tammuz, Tzom HaChamishi, the fast of Av, Tzom HaShavi, the fast of Tishrei, and Tzom HaAsiri, the fast of Teves. And the Gemara goes on to discuss the background for each of them. We saw it, right? We saw Teves, and we saw Tammuz, and the Churban of the Beis Hamikdash Av, and then we saw the Chodesh HaShvi, beginning the 41st parak of Yirmiyahu. So in the bracketed part, near the beginning of the white lines, Tzom HaShvi, that's Gimel Tishrei, earlier today, Shebo Ner Gedaliah ben Achikam, the day, it sounds from the Gemara that he Gedaliah against the Radak, the Gedaliah was assassinated on Gimel Tishrei, Umiha Rago, who killed the Yishmael ben Asanya Rago. That's what the pasuk tells us. And that teaches you, says the Gemara, that the death of a tzaddik is as weighty as the destruction of the temple. Where did that extra line come from? What's the Gemara angling at? So, really, what the Gemara is angling at is, seize Yerushalayim, break it into Yerushalayim, the fall of Yerushalayim, the fall of Beis HaMikdash, and the death of Gedaliah. Which of these four is not like the other? Right. National, Beis HaMikdash, and then certainly a tragedy, but the murder of one man doesn't seem comparable. And the Gemara says, no, Shkula, it's as weighty as destruction of Beis HaMikdash, it belongs in this tragic list of four events for which we fast. And you look at the Rambam in Hilchos Tanios, when he speaks about each of the Tanios, and I believe it's the beginning of the fifth chapter of Hilchos Tanios, he paraphrases this Gemara, and he says this was the extinguishing of the last ember of the Jewish community. Now, presumably, the Rambam is interpreting that line of Shkula Misa Sadikim Kesreifas Beis Elokeinu, he's speaking to that issue. In other words, the murder of one person would not alone have warranted a fast for all of Klal Yisrael for generations. But the murder of Gedaliah was not only the murder of Gedaliah, but as everyone is saying from different angles, of course, of the story, it's the end of the Jewish community, as we see. It does indeed. It's the end of any sort of Jewish community in Eretz Yisrael. Asher hefkid melech bavel ba'aretz. But then there's a surprising pasuk. And let's wrap up the next 4 to 7 minutes by looking at this pasuk, an intriguing Gemara, and thinking about what else this teaches us and what else this can give us to take with us from Mitzom Gedaliah. Perek Mem Aleph Pasuk Tes, talking about the infamous pit into which Yishmael had been tossing victims of him. Habor Asher Yishlich Sham Yishmael, that pit to which Yishmael had thrown the bodies, is called Pigrei HaAnashim, all the corpses, Asher Hika B'Yad Gedaliyahu, who had been smitten by Gedalia. Goes on to say that this pit had been originally a wonderful thing. It had been made by one of the Jewish kings to provide water for the Jews who were traveling to be Ola Regel. And now, sort of like it's a repeat of that, the irony of the Jews coming with the Karban Mincha, and they're killed by Ishmael. This pit had been originally a joyous thing. It had been an item for mitzvah. Jews would be coming, you know, for Pesach, for Sukkot, for Shavuos, to Yerushalayim, traveling from the north, and they would stop, this is one of the watering stops. They would stop here and spend the night, they would grab a drink of water, and this pit had become a vehicle of murder. But not only that, a vehicle of whose murder? We thought it was Yishmael. Here the Pasuk says, you see it. Perek Memal, Pasuk Tes, 41:9. Asher hika b'gyag gedal yahu. Are we blaming the victim? It's going on. Gedalia hadn't murdered, he hadn't lifted a finger to anyone. He was a pacifist. That's exactly what the Gemara in Maseches Nida wants to know. In the beginning of the wide line, Nida met Samach Aleph from Alf. Quotes on the third wide line, quotes the Pasuk, HaBor Asher Yishlich Sham Yishmael, it's called Pigrei HaNashim, Asher Hikal B'Yai Gedalia, who were smitten at the hand of Gedalia. V'chi Gedalia HaRagam. The line begins with V'chi. Did Gedalia kill them? Halo Yishmael HaRagam. Yishmael was a murderer, not Gedalia. Gedalia was a victim of violence. So how could the Pasuk, and the Pasuk is internally inconsistent. It says, Yishmael is throwing the corpses who had been killed beyond Gedalia. The Gemara says something remarkably frank. You should have listened to Yochanan. Gedalia wasn't blameless. Yochanan had come knocking, not once but twice. Yochanan tried two different sorts of meetings. He said, maybe the group meeting, in a group conference, you're not willing to speak your mind, so we'll have a mano. He had a private conversation with Gedalia. It still didn't help. Gedalia should have listened. Mala levakatsu gila raga. The Torah considers it to an extent, though he bears a certain amount of moral culpability, not only for his own death, but for the death of the hundreds of Jews that Yishmael would be killed. Why? Because he could have stopped it. And the Gemara goes on to comment, Halacha lama Gemara codifies it. Amar Rava, Hai Lishna Bisha, Afa Pidil Kabuli Lomi Boy, Mechash Lomi Boy. If there's Lashon Hara, if someone tells me Lashon Hara, so I can't accept it as a certainty, but I have to be open to the possibility of it's true, of it being true, and I have to take proper precautions. Someone tells me something, so I don't know what the story is, he may be. What he's saying may be correct, may not be correct, and maybe multiple layers, multiple angles, multiple perspectives, but there may be a degree of veracity, fully or partially, to what he's saying. It would be irresponsible of me to just ignore substantive lashon hara that comes my way.
In a life and death situation.
This Gemara is the source of the notion of lashon hara l'tawelas. The fact that you can speak lashon hara, that you can accept lashon hara when it's pertinent to save oneself or to save someone else, so this Gemara is one of the sources for that. And here to speak lashon hara, Lutalas, I know that's true. To hear lashon hara, I don't know. Maybe he's making it up. Maybe he's just jealous of Yishmael. But he should have at least considered the possibility of it being true. So the truth is, what these two Gemaras together, Rosh Hashanah Yud Ches on the one hand, and Nida Samach Aleph on the other hand, sort of give us sort of the two sides of the coin. There's the hideous, the jealousy, the narcissism, the sense of the jilted sense of entitlement on Yishmael's part, and the murderous outcome. But and then there's the subtler angle, but also the sin of Gedalia. Gedalia is not only a victim. If no one had told Gedalia, then he would be purely a victim. Nothing he could have done. But there was something he could have done. And not once, but twice, Yochanan came and told him. And pleaded with him, let me take care of you. And he absolutely refused. It can't be, it can't be, it can't be. You don't have the right to say it can't be. For yourself. And once again, Asher Hivkid Melech Bavel Baretz, HaKadosh Baruch Hu gave you the Melech, in this case, Nebuchadnezzar, gave you responsibility. You're responsible for other people's lives, for other people's livelihoods. And you remember, going back to Perek Mem, the first thing that Gedaliah offered the people who came to him was a promise of security. I have your back. You're taking responsibility for other people, you better live up to it. And this was a total lack of responsibility. Just let it drop. How do you let it drop? With the most dire consequences possible. And that's perhaps something the Yishmael figure is so evil and seems so far from us. The Gedaliah figure, he's not overtly a bad man, but he was irresponsible. Irresponsible with consequences. And that's a part of the Cheshma Nefesh of Tzom Gedaliah, is to think about how to make tikkunim in our own lives for the Yishmael aspect and for the Gedaliah aspect. And they say the Yishmael aspect. Which of us has the Yishmael aspect? So I would say, well, let's take it down many, many notches. At its core, it's a lack of bitachon. Those of you who had the opportunity the other several months ago to learn Chazon Ish's essay on bitachon together. So he points out that Gemara in Yuma Daf Lamed Ches speaks of recognizing reality that if HaKadosh Baruch Hu wanted me to have it, I would have it. If I don't have it, and you do, it's not true that I don't have it because you do. I don't have it because I don't have it. You do have it because you have it. If HaKadosh Baruch Hu wanted me to have it, I would have it. The fact that the proximate cause of my not having it is because HaKadosh Baruch Hu decided it's not for me. Period. We could have both ended up somehow with what we want. We could have neither ended up with what we want, or one or the other. It's a difficult lesson, but an incredibly important one. And that's the root in our lives that hopefully has far less severe consequences than the murderous consequences, the murderous ends to which Yishmael runs with it. But that sort of lack of itachon, the looking at what others have instead of being... as long as it's a zero, in my mind, it's a zero-sum game, I can't be happy for what you have, because if you have it, means I don't have it. If HaKadosh Baruch Hu is not in the picture in that way, so then either you have it or I have it. Whatever it may be. And then once I'm jealous, once I violate Lo Sachmod, that could go to who knows where that will take me. Certainly in terms of corroding relationships, if not worse. And then to consider not only to what extent do you want to fix the problem of bitachon that Yishmael gives such severe expression to, but also to think about the Gedaliah piece, and to think about the extent to which if we have responsibilities, when do we let those responsibilities drop? And to consider the fact, leave out the word Babel, Asher Hivkid Mela HaMelech Baretz. HaKadosh Baruch Hu gives each and every one of us jobs to do. HaKadosh Baruch Hu gives each and every one of us a position. HaKadosh Baruch Hu gives each and every one of us a portfolio of people and of concerns that we're supposed to take care of. And we need to do the right thing by ourselves, and we need to do the right thing by the people and concerns whom HaKadosh Baruch Hu has entrusted to us. Those two ideas, the idea of bitachon, and they're almost work in opposite directions. And on the one hand, the tikkun of Yishmael is to recognize ultimately it's up to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. If I don't have it, that was HaKadosh Baruch Hu's decision. But at the same time, results are on him, but efforts are on us. So if HaKadosh Baruch Hu gave us responsibilities, we need to, at the same time that if results aren't as we hoped, we ascribe that to HaKadosh Baruch Hu's decision, but as long as it's a live issue, I need to step up to the plate and take responsibility. So these are hopefully some of the ideas that we can walk away from at Tzom Gedaliah. I mentioned last night that Tzom Gedaliah also serves as the first of the 7 days of official preparation for Yom Kippurim, as is mentioned, the very first din of Yom Kippur, in the Masad Maseches Yuma is that today, Gimel Tishrei, was the first day of preparation. So perhaps these twin ideas of Bitachon and Achrayas, of trusting HaKadosh Baruch Hu and take responsibility, are two of the ideas we need to take with us from Tzom Gedalia as we march through this week preparing for Yom Kippur. And finally, I'll leave you with food for thought. The very next event that appears on the calendar, historically speaking, is Hanukkah. Tzom Gedalia, as I mentioned before, is a very extinguishing, as the Rambam puts it, the very last ember of the first Commonwealth. The Jews come back to build the second Beis HaMikdash, but less than a century later, but they don't have sovereignty. They're now, for well over a century, they have a Beis HaMikdash as a part of the Persian Empire. Then they have a Beis HaMikdash, Alexander conquers the Persians, Alexander dies, and the Alexandrian Empire falls into three parts, and the Syrian Greeks, the Yevanim, take over the Eretz Yisrael as part of their portfolio. And it's only at the time of the Nes of Hanukkah that the Jews have their sovereignty in Eretz Yisrael restored. And here's food for thought over the next 2 months. I think, in a sense, that there's a duality in Hanukkah also. And it just might be the two Nisim of Hanukkah, the Nes HaMelchama and the Nes HaShemen, might be, in a sense, responses to the two Chataim that this story had ended with. And maybe the Nes HaShem, Nes Muhammad, are in a certain sense a tikkun for the chet of lack of bitachon and its murderous end in the hands of Yishmael, and the chet of a lack of taking responsibility for the tzibur that had been committed by Gedalia. Maybe we'll pick up with this, something to think about in the next 2 months. How does Hanukkah respond to Tzom Gedalia? Rosa, thank you so much for coming out. Thank you tonight. Good Kabbalah Satfilos. Thank you.